And we're holding on page Samach Zayin in Rosh Hashanah, a few lines before the end of Oisvav, about 7 lines or so from the bottom. We were learning about a couple of different things of the symbolisms. First, we started with the symbolism of why Hashem tells us to bring the Korban Omer on Pesach and the Shtei Alechem on Shavuos and Nisuch HaMayim on Sukkos, because that will affect Hashem's judgment of us those 3 times during the year. And Malchus, Zichronis, and Shofros, that we should crown Hashem and he should remember us for good through the Shofar, and why we use specifically a Shofar of a ring. So now the Gemara continues. Why do we blow Shofar on Rosh Hashanah? The Gemara interjects, what do you mean, Lama Token? Rachmana, Amatiku. Hashem says to blow, we blow. There's no second guessing that. Which, to be exact, Marsha points out, actually later in the Masechta, it points out that really by Rosh Hashanah we only have the word Truah mentioned. The concept that we need a Tzkiyah sound, we actually learn by Gzeirah Shavah from what it says by Yovel. It talks about it towards the end of the Masechta, but nevertheless, of course, that's still part of what Hashem says. Ella, so no, what Rabbi Akiva means is Loma Meriyin. Fine, why do we blow a Truah? Again, the question is, the Gemara says, what is he even asking? Rachman, Hashem says there should be a remembrance of Truah, so there has to be blowing a Truah. El also know what Rabbi Yitzchok means to ask is Lama Token Umarian Chain Yoshvin, the Token Umarian Chain Omdin. Why do we first blow Tekiyas and Truas when we're sitting and then when we're standing? Now you have like this: the Tekiyas that we do before Musaf are called Tekiyas to Miyoshev. Technically, everybody is allowed to sit except for the Baal Tekeya. Lamaisa, of course, everybody stands anyway, but those are called Tekiyas to Miyoshev. Then you have the tekiyas that take place during Shemini Esrei, and you have the different minhagim and different kehillas. We have both during Shtilo Shemini Esrei and during Chazaras HaShatz. Some have only by Chazaras HaShatz, whatever. Those are called tekiyas me'umad because everybody has to stand as a matter of halacha. So the question is, why we do that? Why do we first do them sitting and then standing? And the reason is, k'dela arba v'satan, the reason is in order to confuse the satan. So what does that mean? How does it confuse the Satan? So Rashi explains, when he sees that we Jewish people find the mitzvah so precious that it quiets him, it forces him to be quiet. He has nothing to be mekatrig against. Tosfos brings from the Aruch that since, as we've discussed before, one thing about the shofar is it reminds us of the shofar gadol when Mashiach comes. So what happens is when the Satan hears the shofar being blown, he gets all confused. He thinks this might finally be the shofar gadol, and then that's it. I'm a goner. So therefore, that quiets him down, and now he has no ability to go and be mekatzer. In fact, Eitz Yosef brings over here from the Tur, the word shofar is Rosh HaTevis, Satan ve'ein pega ro. So it represents when we blow the shofar, then it makes sure there's no Satan and there's no, the expression ain Satan ve'ein pega ro is taken from a pasuk. So it means, in other words, when we blow shofar, then in fact it gets rid of the Satan. There are different opinions among Rishonim, which exactly are the ones that we're saying over here, la'ar b'vas ha-satan. It comes out from the way the Gemara is saying it over here, on the face of it, that the ones that we're doing when we're sitting, the first ones are actually the ones that are really La'ar B'vas HaSatan, and the primary ones would be later on during Shemini Esrei. And in fact, there's an explanation. So why do we do it in that order? Why don't we do the ones La'ar B'vas HaSatan later? And the idea is, this way, people shouldn't be mezalzel in the first ones, given that the first ones we are saying the brachas in connection with, then everybody takes them very seriously. And then on the other hand, the other ones doing Shemini Esrei that are more the primary ones, then people take seriously because they have to stand for those. So that way, everybody's taking all of them seriously. With that said, the Baal HaMor learns that actually the Tekiyas La'arav HaSatan are actually the ones that take place after davening. You have in Shulchan Aruch, it mentions a minhag to blow one long Tekiyah after davening, la'ad v'sa sutton. We have a minhag that we blow full 30 sounds after Musaf and after Tillim. So to a certain extent, those are also la'ad v'sa sutton. But again, it's the idea that it was showing, as Rashi says, was showing that the mitzvah is precious to us, and therefore that confuses the sutton. And also, again, that the sutton thinks to himself, you never know, any time, fine, of course, he hears us blowing shofar every year, but the fact is that he never knows, this time it might combine together with the shofar gadol, and he's a goner, and therefore that quiets him down. There are many, many different other explanations of what it means. La'ab of a satan. It means, among other things, the satan is also the Yetzirah. So the Ababinel points out, you know, you have the Gemara in Baba Basra that says, who's satan, who Yetzirah, who Malach HaMavis. So therefore, so La'ab of a satan also means the one purpose of the shofar is for is to break our hearts, to make us take notice in Tucker Shofar Be'irva Omla Yacharadu. People are naturally afraid when they hear the sound of a shofar, and that breaks the Yetzirah. So that's another meaning of La'abris HaSatan, that it confuses our own internal Satan and makes it more that we're now more roi, that Hashem should judge us favorably and forgive us. There's something that Amor writes about it, that Amor wrote a sefer called Torah Sa'ola, where he takes all the dinim of the Korbanus and all the dinim of the Bais Mikdash and various other mitzvahs and explains them based on Chakira, based on philosophy. So he points out an idea. There was a popular philosophical notion back then that the world has always existed. To some extent, you have that with modern science as well. They have the whole concept of the Big Bang or whatever, but they push it back zillions of years in the past, whatever. So we have to counteract that. By we're taking, he says, you have the four basic yesodis, Esh, Mayim, Ruach, and Ofer, and you're taking three of them and using them when you're blowing shofar, and that helps demonstrate that, no, Hashem created, we're recognizing that Hashem created the world and we're crowning him as king, and that we don't hold this nonsense that the world has always existed, but rather we recognize that Hashem is the one who created it. And Rabbi Yitzchok continues, Kol Shana Shein Token Lo B'Tchilasa, any year when they don't blow shofar at the beginning, Marian Lo B'Sofa, then that year will be treated badly later on in the year. They're going to have the Jewish people are going to have a difficult time that year, my time, Deloy Arab of Sutton, because the Sutton has not been confused, so therefore he was Makatering, and now the result is that, therefore we don't have such an easy time of it. Now, you can have a case, of course, where we don't blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah because it came out on Shabbos, like this year. Tosfos brings from Halachas Gedolos, that's not what it's talking about. When it comes out on Shabbos, that's not what we mean, that ein mirin b'tfilasa. And of course, we have many Maimonides Chassidus that explain in detail how Shabbos accomplishes exactly what Tkiyas Shofar is going to. So therefore, it's not that. Tosfos brings from Halachas Gedolos, it means where there was some kind of oinus. So there was some unavoidable circumstance because of which they couldn't blow shofar. That's what the Gemara is saying over here. Other Rishonim disagree even with that. And they say, no, if there was an onus, even that is not what the Gemara means over here. It means that for whatever reason, they didn't bother. They weren't interested, or they didn't bother or whatever to blow shofar. Then that's what we're saying over here. That's not going to be such a great year. But if there was an onus, then those Rishonim learn, that's not going to be a problem. And the Gemara continues, Amar Yitzchak, Kol Shana Sherosha B'Tchilasa Misasheres B'Sofa. A year that's poor at the beginning is going to be rich at the end. Meaning, Rashi explains, when the Jewish people act in a way like poor people on Rosh Hashanah, and they daven fervently to Hashem, and they're not acting like a rich person who's a Baal Gaiva. You have Rashi brings from the Pasuk, Tachnunim Yedaber Rosh. A poor person speaks in a very humble, suppliant tone, as opposed to, the pasuk continues, and Osher speaks more with Azus. So when the Jewish people act on Rosh Hashanah in a way of Rosha, where we show that we're completely dependent on Hashem, then Misasheres B'Sofa, such a year becomes rich at the end. Hashem gives them a rich, bountiful, good year. My timer, Dichtiv, because the pasuk says, Meireshes Hashanah V'ad Achris Shana. The pasuk says that Hashem is looking after Eretz Yisrael and the rest of the world from the beginning of the year till the end of the year. And Meireshes, see, if it's written in the pasuk without the Aleph, so we can doubt in the word Reshes as being Meloshin Rosh, being Meloshin poor. V'ad Achris Shana, and then what continues until the Achris of the year, the word Achris doesn't just mean the end, the word Achris also means the future or the hope. Miklal Sofa de Isla Achris, meaning this is the kind of year that's going to have a hope, that's going to have a future, that they're going to have a good, that they're going to have a good rest of the year. So we're saying on the Reishis, on the beginning of the year, when they act in a way of Roshus, then they're going to have the year that's a year that's going to have an Achris, a year that's going to have a good positive later on, a good positive later on, a future in that year. And there's a so on the basic meaning, that's what it means. In other words, that when the Jewish people act in a way of Rosh, when we show on Rosh Hashanah that we depend completely on Hashem, then we're saying that yeah. But Amr Rabbi Yitzchak, and Rabbi Yitzchak says, here's another thing, ain't done a sa'odim elofi ma'isiv shalosha shah. Hashem judges a person only the way he's acting right now. So even though Hashem knows that he's going to become a Rosha later on, Hashem judges him right now the way he is, where he's not that. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, by Yishmael, ki shoma elakimo kohana bar sherusham. Hashem has listened to the voice of the young boy where he is. Meaning, it doesn't just mean where he is as he's lying there under the bush, but it means where he is. Rashi brings on the pasuk that bar sherusham, that right now the malach asharas amakater are being makatered on him, that his descendants are going to cause the Jewish people to die of thirst. And Hashem says, yeah, but right now he's not like that, and therefore that's actually one that's brought. That's one of the reasons why do we read that story on the first day of Rosh Hashanah? We begin with Hashem pocket a Sarah, fine, because like we learned a few days ago, Rosh Hashanah, Sarah was one of the ones who was remembered, and Hashem decided on Rosh Hashanah that she should become pregnant. But why does it then continue with the whole story with Yishmael over there? Is because we have this point of Ba'asher Rosham, which is a very important lesson for Rosh Hashanah. Now, a number of Achronim bring up so Rashi brings that whole thing over here and brings it on the Pasuk as well from Bereishis Rabbah, that the Malachim were accusing Yishmael and saying in the future his descendants are going to make the Jewish people die of thirst. How you talking? You should supply him with water. And Hashem says, right now he's a tzaddik, and I'm only judging him the way he is right now. So what about the Ben Sura Remora? Yeah, so the Mizrahi brings that up, and various other Achronim bring that up. Marsham mentioned it briefly over here. So there's a number of different answers. Among them are the Ben Sura Remora is already starting to act in that way. He's already going and stealing from his parents and so forth. So you can see he's already on the road towards ending up, as the Gemara says over there in Sanhedrin, that the vote is, the Torah looks ahead. Rashi brings it on the Psukim over there by Ben Sura Remora, that eventually he's going to use up all his parents' money, and then he's going to go start robbing and killing people to keep up his habits. So the Eibishter says, Yomus Zakai Val Yomus Chai, better let him die when he's still innocent rather than after he becomes guilty. But yeah, one of the answers is because the Ben Sura Remora has already started down that path, whereas Yishmael had not yet done that. They have an answer that the Marsha gives an answer over here, that here it's Yishmael's descendants are going to be doing it. There it's the Ben Sura Remora himself is going to end up doing that. The Mephoshim also point out, when you get down to him, and Yishmael wasn't exactly the greatest tzaddik at that point either. Rashi mentions a few psukim earlier that he was doing Avodah Zarah, Gila Arayis, Shvichas Damim, but nevertheless, in terms of what he was being judged for at that point, about that his descendants are going to make the Jewish people die of thirst, and Rashi brings the whole story that when they're going into Golos, they're passing by the Yishmaelim, and they ask the Yishmaelim for water, and instead they give them inflated bags, and they think it has water, and they put them to their mouths, and the air comes out of them and suffocates them and kills them. But so as bad as Yishmael was at that point, where he was doing Avodah Zarah, Gilui Arayis, and Shvichas Damim, or at least a semblance of them, nevertheless, he wasn't doing this particular thing, and therefore Hashem is judging him favorably and not holding that against him. And there's many, many different other answers, including that the Ben Sura Remora, to begin with, comes from bad stock. After all, Rashi mentions on the Pasuk over there, based on the Gemara in Sanhedrin, that a Ben Sura Remora often comes from a man married a Yifas Toyar, so already it started out in the wrong way, whereas Yishmael comes from Hogar, who's not the greatest tzaddikus, but he does come from Avraham, and therefore there's less of a concern about that. And there's many, many different other answers about how to reconcile this Ba'asher Husham with the Ben Sura Remora.
We all picked it up at the same time, or didn't somebody pick it up first and it's over?
I don't say one way or the other. I mean, they were thirsty, and they probably weren't thinking straight either, you know, even if some of them did it first, not necessarily did the other ones realize in time. The connection, by the way, between we've had several statements of Rabbi Yitzchak so far, and the one about Ein Donen Asa'odam doesn't so directly seem to be connected with what we were saying so far, before he was saying things that are more directly related to Rosh Hashanah about why we blow shofar both sitting and standing, and that we have to blow at the beginning of the year in order to confuse the Satan, and Kol Shana Shiroshah B'Tchilasa. So a number of the Mephoshim over here explain the connection between these statements of Rabbi Yitzchak, that was saying, now you could have a situation where they didn't blow shofar at the beginning of the year. So they may think, for example, because there was an onus, like Tosfos says, or because they didn't whatever. So they might think, well, that's it. Then we're finished. There's no way for us to fix up the year. But no, they can at least accomplish it by Kol Shana Shadrosha B'Tchilasa. They can still show that they're completely and utterly dependent on Hashem and davening to Hashem with Tachnunim, and therefore that helps counteract that. Now, another point then is, a person may think, okay, now at the beginning of the year, sure, I'm in the right frame of mind, I'm acting in a way of rush and so forth. What's going to be later in the year, though? The fact is, I'm not going to keep that up. I'm not necessarily going to be able to keep that up the whole year, and therefore Hashem is going to hold it against me. So no, he's saying that Hashem judges a person ba'asher hu sham.
Okay. Say
what?
The Sutton.
So we were saying before that one point is, it actually makes the point that it's not so much that he doesn't know what's going on, but that he sees that the mitzvahs are so precious to us that we do the mitzvah in many different possible ways and at many different times, then therefore that confuses him and makes him unable to accuse us. By the way, Tosfos deals with an interesting point in halacha over here. How is it not an issue of Baal Tosik? We know, for example, you can't put extra tzitzis on your beged and say, I'm being yotze the mitzvah in a better way. So how are we blowing shofar again and again, and it's not a problem of Baal Tosik? So Tosfos gives the answer, basically, that when you're doing the same mitzvah again and again on the same day, then it's not considered Baal Tosik. So Baal Tosik would be, if you're adding something to the mitzvah, you add a fifth tzitzis, or you add a fifth parasha to the tefillin, or whatever, or you do the mitzvah, for example, you sit in the sukkah on Shmini Atzeres in order to fulfill the mitzvah of sukkah, rather than like we do it because of Sveik of the Yoma, then that would be a problem of Baal Tosik. But here, where you're doing the same mitzvah again and again during the day, then Tosfos explains it's not a matter of Baal Tosik. The Rashba gives a whole different answer. The Rashba says, why was Tosfos even asking the question? The simple answer is, the Chachamim set it up for us to do it this way, and when we're following the Chachamim, it's not an issue of Baal Tosik. And so they talk about that maybe there's a difference. It's one thing when the Chachamim make a gzera for us, here they're making a takana that we should blow at various different times, and maybe therefore conceivably there could be a problem about Tosif, but Tosfos is saying that there's not, because it's just doing the same mitzvah multiple times during the day. Tosfos gives the example the same way. There's no problem picking up the law of an esrog multiple times during the day. You're not going to say you're over on Baal Tosif in that. Similarly here, when you're blowing shofar multiple times. They made the bracha once, and that's it, yeah. This is also true, right? Yes, yeah, so you have many examples like that where you can do the mitzvah again and again. As long as you're not saying a bracha levatala, then you're good. With that said, by the way, worth mentioning, I mean, when it comes to the shofar, actually it mentions in Shulchan Aruch, there is the consideration that, after all, in principle, the shofar is muktzah on Yom Tov. It is a musical instrument, after all. So once you've finished blowing shofar on Rosh Hashanah, then really you're not supposed to go practicing or handling or whatever. If kids do that, then like it says in the Mishnah at the end of the Masechah, the kids want to play around with it and practice blowing, then they can, but not adults. There are three things that a person does, three situations that he puts himself in that causes Hashem to remember his avedas. Like Hashem starts looking through. Even though Marsha says we're not talking about on Rosh Hashanah, we're talking about other times during the year that Hashem starts, so to speak, investigating in what is this person doing? Does he really deserve to have good happen to him, or the opposite? Chas v'shalom. Elohein, kunotui. One is when he's walking or sitting by a leaning wall, so at any time that wall could collapse on him. So therefore, it causes the Beis Din Shamayah to start checking. Well, does he deserve to have that wall stay intact until he passes by, or maybe it should b'derech hateva fall on him? And yet, the second one, v'iyun tefila. The second one is iyun tefila. Now Rashi explains that means, when we've learned about this before, it means when the person is so mechanist tefillah and he's thinking to himself, for sure, I've had such kavana, Hashem is definitely going to answer my tefillah. So first of all, the Gemara mentions in Brachas that can cause ke'ev lev, causes him heartache, because eventually Hashem may decide for reasons of his own to not answer that tefillah, and then the person is disappointed. But on top of that, also it's maskir and avinosef shaladam, because it makes the base in Shamayla, it makes Hashem start thinking, well, does the person actually deserve to have his tefillah answered so well, and maybe not. Tosfos here and in several other places, by the way, points out, there are two different meanings that Chazal used when they use the word iyun tefillah. There's a positive kind of iyun tefillah, and there's a negative kind. The positive kind, the Gemara in fact has an expression in Bava Basra that there's three averus that the average person is not nitzel mehem b'chol yoyim. Inevitably, a person is over on some semblance of these averus every day, and one of them is iyun tefillah that a person does. Many people don't concentrate while they're davening. It's not just a problem for us, by the way. Even in the times of the Gemara, there's a famous verse that's brought in many places in Chassidus, which ultimately comes from the Yerushalmi, where one of the Amoraim says that I'm grateful to my head that it automatically, like almost muscle memory, bows when it comes to Moedim. Like he himself is not focused enough to remember to bow by Moedim, but his head does it automatically. So, and so the Gemara says that that kind of thing, most people are nichshol in it every day. So that kind of even tefillah is a positive thing that a person should be concentrating and focusing on dalif nemiata oimid and the meaning of the words of davening and so on and so forth. Here we're talking about the negative kind of even tefillah, whereas Rashi is saying he's soimach and he's thinking to himself, I daven such kavana, for sure Hashem has to answer my tefillah. And that's not such a good thing.
There's an expression that Hashem is full of rachamim, but the base of tomorrow and goes very strictly according to the law.
Could be. I don't know. I'm not familiar with that. I'm not familiar with that word, but could be. Okay. And the third one, Moser Din Achavev, the third one that called the third thing that causes Hashem to look more carefully into the person's maisim is where he's Moser Din Achavev, where he hands over a din about somebody else to Hashem. Meaning that he says that somebody has wronged him or whatever, and instead of the Gemara in Baba Kama talks about this, it was a couple of weeks ago in Daf Yomi, that instead of he has recourse to a Beis Din here on earth, he could conceivably go to a Beis Din here on earth and get it dealt with, and instead he goes and complains to Hashem and asks that Hashem should punish that person. So that causes Hashem to start looking into, well, are you really on the level that, are you really where you should be in terms of Hashem not overlooking anything of yours? Kavim Malach cursed his enemies, but that's because, so Gemara explains over there in Baba Kama, it's only when Islay Dina Ba'ara, when there's somebody here on earth where he could go to get the matter taken care of, and instead he's Moser Din LaShamayim. David was in a situation, there's nobody that he can turn to. Shaul is against him, all of Shaul's retainers and advisors and whatever are against him, even many people from Shevet Yehuda themselves weren't too friendly to him, so he had nobody to turn to except to ask Hashem to deal with the matter. So that's fine. But here we're talking about where there is a Beis Din available on earth, there is a way to take care of it, and instead he's Moser Din LaShamayim. As in fact Rab Chanan says, Kolam Moser Din HaChaveiro, a person gives over a judgment against somebody else to Hashem, who nanash tchila, he, the person who complains to Hashem, ends up getting punished first. Shenema, we find that Sora said, "Vatoma Sorei al Avram Chamosi al Vacham Gomer." After Hagar had Sora had told Avram to marry Hagar. Hagar becomes pregnant, and Vateka Gvirta by now she started treating Sora disrespectfully, as Rashi says on the pasuk over there, bringing from the Medrash that Hagar says to herself, "Look at this Sora has been infertile for so many years. Here I became pregnant right away. I must be a greater tzaddikus than Sora." So she started looking down on her, and Sora says to Avram, "Chamosi alecha, my wrong is on you," meaning that she's saying two things. First of all, you're tolerating that Hagar is being chutzpahdik to me, and you're not doing anything about it. So she's saying that uchtiv, and later on we have vayover Avraham. This but the Sarah begamer. Later on, Avraham had to come to mourn for Sarah, meaning that Sarah passed away earlier than she would have, because in other words, had it not been for that, she might have lived to the same age as Avraham, and actually she was 10 years younger than Avraham, so if she'd lived to the same age, she would have outlived him, but even if not, at least she would have lived and passed away around the same time as Avraham. The fact that she passed away all those years earlier, 38 years before Avraham, is because of this, because she was Moser Din LaShamayim. Now, Tosfos points out over there in Baba Kama that there were a couple of possibilities. She could have gone to the Beis Din of Shem Ben Noach, which existed at that time. Or she could have told Avraham himself before she starts saying Chamosi Alecha and Yishpat Hashem Beni Avanecha. She should have first gone over to him privately and told him something's wrong over here. Hagar is acting in a brazen way towards me, and please do something about it. And instead she does this thing Yishpat Hashem Beni Avanecha. She jumped the gun like that, and therefore we're saying this was the consequence. So you have the vote from the Baal Shem Tov that relates to this, where it says that a person is giving din v'cheshbon lefnei melech malchei hamlochim, where the Baal Shem Tov famously says that the Eibishter puts a person in a situation where he ends up saying a din against somebody else. He sees somebody else doing something, which is the me'ein of what he did, and he judges the person. If he judges the other person harshly and says he deserves to be punished, then the Beis Din Shamayla takes that and says, okay, well, based on that, then you have said on yourself that you deserve such and such. Then Rabbi Yitzchak says another thing. Dalad dvarim karin gzaudine shel adam. There are four things that a person does that causes Gzar Din to be ripped up. Elohim, Tzedakah, Tza'aka, crying out to Hashem, Shinui Hashem, changing his name, the Shinui Maisa, and changing his deeds. Now, in the simple sense, changing his deeds means tshuva. And so Marsha points out that the three of these things, Tzedakah, Tza'aka, and Shinui Maisa, correspond to tshuva, tefillah, and tzedakah. We have in the Machzorim, you have a tshuva, tefillah, tzedakah, ma'avirnas roya agzera. You have the little words printed above them, tsoim, kol, and momen, and those reflect over here. And what we're talking about over here, tzedakah, tza'aka, and Shinui Maisa. As far as Shinui Mokum, he says that doesn't really seem to fit in that category. So one possibility is because Shinui Hashem and Shinui Mokum, as Shinui Mokum, as the Gemara is going to, Shinui Hashem, as it says over here, and Shinui Mokum, as the Gemara is going to bring soon, and Yesh Omrim, those are not really, first Marsha says, those are not really Mavirinus Roya Agzela. Those are not so much for Kapara. Those are more just that they help change the person's mazel. After all, the Gemara is going to learn them from Sarah and Avram, respectively. They didn't need a kapara for Averis. They didn't have any. So instead, it was to change their mazel. So therefore, that might be why in Unasana Toker, if they're not mentioned. But then he brings from the Smag, and actually it's from the Rambam and the Ran, many Rishonim bring the idea that Shinui Hashem means that the person is now saying, I'm a different person. I'm not the same person I was before. And similarly, Shinui Mokum causes a person to feel more humble. So in that case, then those also have to do with Chet. But nevertheless, we still see that, so sometimes you can have that it's only to change the mazel, but when there's Chet, then in addition, it helps to be Mechaper on the Chet as well. So the Paitan in Rasana Tokum doesn't mention those because, again, he's focusing on things that are there exclusively for Kapara, as opposed to these may sometimes be for one and sometimes for the other. As far as Shinui Maisa, by the way, the Ritva makes a point. We don't mean, now Marsha is saying that Shinui Maisa means Parsha doing tshuva. The Ritva says there's not much of a chiddush, and of course a person has to do tshuva to be forgiven. So rather he says Shinui Maisa over here would mean that a person changes the other kinds of maisim that he's doing, the things that are not averus per se, the things that are divrei harushus, the things that maybe are causing a chil Hashem, the things that maybe are gateway things to actual averus or whatever. He's changing those, and then for sure Hashem can say, okay, well then we see the person is completely turning over a new leaf and deserves to have his gzav din ripped up. So tzedakah, where do we see that tzedakah has that power? Dichtiv tzedakah tatzol mimavos. Tzedakah saves from death. They cried out to Hashem and he saved them, and then, so there was a gzar din against them of any of the four things that I mentioned over there, and they cried out to Hashem and he saved them. The Shinui Hashem dichtiv vayomer Hashem al Avram sorai ishtecha loy sikra shma sorai, don't call her sorai anymore, ki sorah shma, because her name is Sorah. All of a sudden, and then Hashem continues, I've benched her, and I'm going to give you a son from her. So we see that Shinui Hashem had an effect to change the gzera on her. Avram's name was changed as well, but the truth is Avram already had a child before that as well. He had Yishmael several years before his name was changed. So with him, Marsha points out soon that, yeah, the Gemara is going to learn Shinui Mokum from Avraham, because when he changed his spot, when he moved from Choron to Eretz Yisrael, then he was after that he was able to have Yishmael. But you don't learn from him so much the Shinui Hashem, because it's true, it was a contributing factor, but it was mainly the fact that Sarah's name was changed. Shinui Maisa, where do we see that changing, or that person changing his ways, causes the Gzar Din to be ripped up? It's Yosef, by the way, points out also that brings from Marsha and Nedarim, which also talks about this Indian over there, that at least Avraham at least had a son before that. He had Yishmael, even if Yishmael is not his legitimate son who's going to eventually yarshin him. Sarah hadn't had children at all. So we're focusing much more on her Shinui Hashem, which completely transformed things for her in a way that it didn't really do so as much for Avraham, because he was already able to have a son before that. Anyway, Shinui Maisa Dichtiv, you have in the story of Yonah. Vayaru Elokimus Maaseim, Hashem saw the deeds of the people of Nineveh. Kishovu Midarkam Arah, that they had gone back from their evil ways. Uchtiv, and the pasuk continues, Vayinochem Elokim Al Arah Shadibu Lasas Lahem, Hashem regretted, so to speak, the evil that he was going to do to them. Vayasa, and he didn't do it. So we see that the Shinui Maisa had an effect. And by the way, you have, for example, that the Medrash brings, like this, you have a concept called, the Gemara talks about in Gittin and in Bava Kamma, there's a concept called Takonas HaShavim. that the Chachamim many times make takonas to make it easier for a gazlan to do tshuva. In particular, you have the din that under certain circumstances, the person stole something, he doesn't have to return the actual object itself, even if it still exists. He only has to return the value of it. A classic example is if he stole a beam and built it into a building, we don't require him to tear down the whole building. He can just return the value of the beam. But it's brought in a medrash that the people of Nineveh didn't use such loopholes. If they had a stolen beam in their mansion, they would literally tear down the whole mansion to take it out, and therefore that's the kind of thing the Eibush just saw, that they're going the extra mile, and therefore we had Rachman Sunday. Even by Goyim, yeah. By the way, it does. There is a later Navi of the Tirei, also Nachum, who also says a harsh Nevuah against Nineveh, how it's going to be defeated and destroyed and whatever. And they didn't do Tshuva, and they ended up getting what was coming to them. The Medrash says actually that's basically what happened, is that Yonah had come to them and warned them, and they did Tshuva, and then they stayed like that for several decades. They remained good, but afterwards they deteriorated again. They went back to their old ways, and at that point the Eibush said, I'm not giving them another chance. He sent the Navi Nochum to tell them they're going to be destroyed, and kachava. Okay. The Yesh Omim Af Shinui Mokim. Some say that also a person changing his place is also a way to whip up the Gzau Din on him. And again, the idea being, one idea being that it changes his mazel, but another idea being that it makes him more humble. The Gemara, in fact, mentions in a few places that you have a situation, you have a person whose Yetzer Hara is really overpowering him and he's having a hard time controlling it. So one thing it says is Yelech L'Mokim, he should go to a place where nobody recognizes him. And one of the explanations is that because that way that will help, that itself will help break the power of his Yetzer Hara. When a person is in an unfamiliar area, then he doesn't feel as full of himself as he did before. So here it's a similar thing. Shenema, as we find by Avram, by Yema Hashem Avram lech lecha v'goyim, Hashem tells him to leave Choron and go to Eretz Yisrael. V'hodav eschal goy gadol, and then Hashem says, I'll make you into a great nation. So the idach. So now, what is the Tanakama answer to that? Why doesn't he list that as well? Hahud is chosid Eretz Yisrael. Who dahanule? That's different. He's going to Eretz Yisrael. Hashem meant the chos of Eretz Yisrael will help him be able to have children where he didn't before. That doesn't prove that in general shinui makim, to move from one place to another in Eretz Yisrael or one place to another in Chutz La'aretz, should have that effect. Maybe not necessarily. Marsha refers over here to different mefoshim that talk about how exactly we're darshaning. Is it that the word lech lecha, the lecha itself means go, as it actually says on the pasuk, lahana osrol tevascha, that it's going to be for your benefit, or is it mesmichos, as the Gemara seems to be saying over here, from the fact that Hashem tells him lech lecha and then continues ve'eschol gadol? So different ways of understanding how exactly that point is implied in the pasukim. Another thing Rabbi Yitzchak says, which we learned in Sukkah a while back, was that a person is obligated to go greet his Rebbe on the Yom Tov. Now we had over there Rabbi Eliezer, who held that on Yom Tov itself a person should stay put. So according to him, that would mainly be more on Chol HaMoed. We had that whole discussion in Masechta Sukkah. But anyway, Shenema, we find by the Isha Ashunamis, where she's in a rush to go to Elisha because of what happened with her son. Her husband doesn't know what happened. By Yomer, he says, Madua Ate Lechase, love, why are you going to him? Loi Chodesh Vole Shabbos. It's not Rosh Chodesh and it's not Shabbos. Miklal, the Chodesh for Shabbos, he boiled the mezel, which shows that on Rosh Chodesh or on Shabbos, she would have been expected to go. And therefore, we see from that a person is obligated. There's a good deal of discussion about that, some of which we touched on when we learned this about in Sukkah. Why did the Pasuk says Shabbos? So why is Rabbi Yitzchak saying Regel? One answer, of course, is that Yom Tov is sometimes called Shabbos, like Mimachar is a Shabbos. Yeah, Rosh Chodesh is also a Yom Tov for the women, as we know famously, that it was given to them after the Chet HaEgel because they didn't participate in it. So therefore, if we're saying that she would regularly go on Chodesh, then it means that the men should be going on Yom Tov. And there's a lot of different other explanation about it. We learned there actually that what we learned there in Sukkah is that Rabbi Eliezer would say, if you're able to travel and visit your Rebbe and return home the same day, then good. But if you have to stay overnight, then he says during Yom Tov, that's not an appropriate thing to do. Halach is not like him, though, in that. And you have and the Shulchan Aruch doesn't bring this halacha, and no Debi Yehuda discusses that and says maybe it only applies with Bisman Shebeis Hamikdash Kayim. The same way as when the Beis Hamikdash is standing, you have a chiyuv to be Oyla L'Rego on the Yom Tovim, so you also have a chiyuv to visit your Rebbe. But he says maybe after the Churban it doesn't apply, and that would explain why it's not brought in Shulchan Aruch. Okay, for Om Rabbi Yitzchok, Chayavodim L'Taher Es Atzmei B'Rego. A person is obligated to make himself tahor on the Yom Tov. Shenema uvnivlosam loisigo. The pasuk says about the dead bodies of non-kosher animals, you're not allowed to touch them. And as the Gemara is going to explain over here, we're not talking about you're not allowed to touch them any time during the year. It means when it comes Yom Tov time, because you have a mitzvah to be tahor then. It includes so that you can be oyla l'regel and bring your karbanos. It includes so you should be more tahor for the Yom Tov in general. This has implications, lahalacha, by the way, the Gemara mentions in Chagiga. The Gemara has a whole sugyas on the subject. Usually during the year, we say that amei oretz are tomei, midrabanan, and their kelim are tomei, and then we have all kinds of different rules about chaverim staying away from them. But on Yom Tovim, we say none of that applies, and the amei oretz are considered tohor, and their kelim are considered tohor. The Gemara actually learns it out from a different pasuk, but one idea is because chayiv adam l'tahar atzmei b'rego, therefore even the amei oretz would pay attention to that, and they would make an effort to be tohor on the Yom Tovim. So the Gemara says, "Tani nami hachiv." We learn similarly in a brisa. When the pasuk says, "When you've lost some loisi go, yochu yehu yisrael muzhorim al maganavela," you would think that pasuk means that Jews in general are never allowed to touch a nevela. No, Talmud Loma. We have a pasuk, "Emor al koyanim bnei Aaron," that Hashem tells Moshe, "Tell the koyanim that they're not allowed to become tomei by a dead human body." Now, that means B'nai Aaron was Horin, B'nai Yisrael and was Horin. So even when it comes to Tumas Mess, only the Koyanim are warned not to become Tumas Mess, regular Yisraelim are not. And V'haloi Dvorim Kavachomer. Now we can make a Kavachomer from this. Uma Tuma Chamura Koyanim was Horin, Yisrael and was Horin. Madoch, the serious Tuma of a mess, only Koyanim are told to stay away from it and Yisraelim not. Tuma Kala like Koshigan. How much more so the lesser Tuma of an Avela, which is only Tumas Erev. A person just has to go to the mikveh and needs head of Shemesh, as opposed to Tumas Mes is 7 days and needs part Adroma. Like Koshigan. How much more so that Yisrael is not also to touch a nevela. So what does that possibly mean? Berego, it means that on the Yom Tovim, a Yid is not allowed to touch a nevela because he has to be Tohar on the Yom Tovim. Okay. So now the Gemara is going to begin a discussion about how Hashem judges people. It's interesting, by the way. You know, the Pnei Yeshua points out. He says when he came to explain this Gemara, he says at first, I figured this is a mokum lakatsu. This is a place to be brief. He says, I mean, how much can we talk about in our terms of how Hashem's judgment works? Obviously, there's many variables to it that we can't even begin to understand. So he says, at first I thought that it's better to be makatsu. He says it's al derech, like the way the Gemara says in Chagiga, that there are certain things, but muflam mcha al tidrish. There are things about how what was before ma'aseh bereishis and what's going to be after the world ceases to exist, and lamaila and lamata and so forth, where a person is not supposed to delve too deeply into those. So he says, at first I thought we should do the same thing with this. But he says, the fact is, the Chachmei HaGemara put this in Masechta Rosh Hashanah, and appropriately enough, because these are things that a person needs to know when it comes to Rosh Hashanah, to put him in a frame of mind for reconnecting to the Eibishter and doing tshuva. And people tackle want to know about these things, and it does help put them in the correct frame of mind. So therefore he says, I will go ahead and explain it after all. But it is true that a lot of what we're going to learn in this next piece here, really basically from here over the next few pages, over the next at least week or so, is going to be a lot of things. Which is there's a lot of controversial things, a lot of discussion among the Mefoshim, how what exactly it means and how we understand Hashem's judgment in our human terms. Anyway, so the Gemara starts off. Amar Rab Kurs B'doy, Amar Rab Yechanan, Shloisha Sforim Niftochim B'Rosh Hashanah. Three books are open before Hashem on Rosh Hashanah. Obviously not real books. We mean metaphorically that Hashem is judging people in one of three different ways. Echad Shal Tzadikim Gmurim, Ve'echad Shal Rishoyim Gmurim, Ve'echad Shal Benim. You have the Tzadikim Gmurim, the Rishoyim Gmurim, and the Benim. Shal Tzadikim Gmurim Nechtovim Nechtovim La'altu L'chaim. The Tzadikim Gmurim are immediately right there on Rosh Hashanah, written and sealed right away for good. And this is, by the way, why. This is why only the first night of Rosh Hashanah do we say the Shana Tova to Kosev Asechosim, and after that we don't. We say Machsim Atova or whatever, because we don't want to assume that the other person is any less than a tzaddik. The Rishonim Gmurim is the other way around. They're immediately signed for Misa. The Beinanim are suspended there, and their judgment is suspended from Rosh Hashanah to Yom Kippur to see what they're going to do. Zohu, if they're Zoicha, they do more mitzvahs, they do tshuva, etc. Nichtavu l'chaim, and they're written for Chaim. Loi Zohu, nichtavu l'misa, and if not, then the other way around. There's many different points that the Mefoshim deal with over here. Tosfos begins by asking the question, and many other Rishonim also do, that the fact is, what are we saying over here, that Tzaddikim are sealed right away for Chayim and the Rishonim the other way around? The fact is, we often see that there are Tzaddikim who pass away during the year and the Rishonim who have a nice, comfortable life during the year. How does that fit with what we're saying over here? So Tosfos gives the answer. We're talking about Chaya Olam Haba. There are many, many other different explanations among Mefoshim, including that Tzaddikim and Beinanim and Roshoyim over here does not mean the real meaning of Tzaddik and Rosha and Beinanim, like the way they're defined in Tanya, for example, but rather it means Tzaddik Bedino, a person who Hashem judged favorably, whether because he has a little more mitzvahs than Averis, or because Hashem is having Rachmanos on him or whatever, and therefore he's Tzaddik Bedino. And similarly, as far as the Rosha, and similarly, as far as the Beinani. You have also, the Rambam points out anyway, that it's not like you can just count up the numerical number of mitzvahs and averas, because Hashem weighs them differently. One mitzvah can outweigh many averas and vice versa. So you have that. Ultimately, only Hashem knows who's in which category. And there's many, many other different explanations, including that the Chayim and Misa and so forth that we're talking about over here is not necessarily actual life or death, but rather Yisurim versus a comfortable year. There can be, for example, they talk about, you can have, let's say, a person, Hashem has decided that this person is a Ben Olam Haba, but now, during the coming year, Hashem decides, okay, but this person, on the other hand, has done some Averis that need to be cleaned up. Therefore, he's going to get Yisurim during the coming year in order to clean him up, so that eventually he'll be able to get his complete place in Olam Haba. And there's many, many, there's a lot of ink has been spilled on all of this. And there's also, they discuss also, so why does it have to mention three Sfarim, if on the face of it, ultimately, it ends up, there's only two Sfarim. Either they go L'chaim or the opposite. In what sense is there a safer of the Beinim? So one point is because, after all, there is a judgment on them. So the Pnei Yeshua, actually, in his discussion, makes an interesting point. By the Tzaddikim and the Rishoyim, it said the expression that they're nechtomim, they're signed. By the Beinim, it never says signed. It just says nechtovim l'chaim, nechtovim l'misa. He says the vote is like this. Because the Beinanim, really, because they're Beinanim, then they're kind of in the middle over there. Hashem has Rachmanus on them, as it describes later on in the Sugya. Mata klapit chesed, Hashem weighs down the scale towards benefit for them, and therefore Hashem judges them for life for the coming year, whether we mean Chayelam Abba, whether we mean actual life, whatever. The point is, though, you can't say that Hashem seals it, says the Pnei Yeshua, because Chesamay Shalak Kodesh Baruch Hu Emes. Hashem's seal is truth. And if he's judging the person according to truth, then he wouldn't deserve it. Therefore, the Eibishter, so to speak, has to leave it unsigned, unsealed, because he can't sign it with Emes. And therefore, he says, on Rosh Hashanah, Hashem judges with Emes. Therefore, that's why we're saying that they're tloyim, v'oimnim, they're suspended, and they're waiting until Yom Kippur to see what happens. And then if Yom Kippur, they still remain Beinanim, then fine, Hashem has Rachmanos on them. But at that point, because in Yom Kippur, Hashem is already judging us with Rachmim rather than with Din, and therefore he can judge them with Rachmim.
You're talking about altar means right away.
Means right away, yeah. Altar means right away.
Or at the end of the day, maybe something will change.
It's just, it means right away, whatever time during the day that Hashem is judging people. Okay, so we'll continue talking about this next time, Be'ez Hashem, and talk in more detail about this. Yom Yom Mashiach Ge'ola, Yud Gimel Adar Aleph. We say about the generation of Ikvas de Meshicha, ki loy v'chipozin teitzeu, we won't have to be rushing out of Golus, as the Alter Rebbe explains in Tanya, because by Yitzias Mitzrayim they had to, because they hadn't conquered the Ra yet, by the Gula Asid, that won't be necessary. But that's talking about when the actual coming out of Golus begins. When it comes to the last moments of Golus, though, Adar Rebbe, we have to do v'chipozin, We have to take advantage as fast as possible of every moment, every passing moment, because it is more, is greater and greater. Because, as the Gemara says, that there comes a time when Mashiach comes. The years where you say, "I have no desire in them," because now we don't have the ability to do mitzvahs in Yemos Mashiach the way that we do now under the difficulties and all that we do now. So therefore, we have to make use. We have to use the full potential of every moment in the best possible way. Continuing on halachas of Shabbos, so we were talking about warming up or insulating food. So on Shabbos, you're not allowed to wrap up food with anything, even when it's not moisif hevel, even when it's not adding heat to the food. So for example, you take a pot off the stove, you're not allowed to wrap it in towels or something to preserve the heat. Before Shabbos, you would be allowed to, but only on something that preserves the heat, but on Shabbos, you can't do even that.